Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, welcome to today's edition of the podcast. My name is Zoe Close, Area Sales Manager for Practice Plan, and today we've got Sarah Buxton with us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you very much. Sarah, can you start by telling us a little bit about your background and what you do and where you're from?
Yeah, of course. I'm a director of FTA Law and I specialise in HR and employment advice for people within the dental industry. I predominantly act for practice owners in all aspects of running a practice, including dealing with employment issues in the employment tribunal. So quite varied. I've been working in the dental industry for over 8 years now, so it's nice to be part of an industry this small and really enjoy it.
Still get your head round working with dentists.
Yeah, absolutely. They keep me busy.
Yeah, it's a very interesting profession. Sarah, today, I mean, I've just been looking at some notes that we've been looking at, and you've mentioned here three types of employment. Can you explain that further for us?
Yeah, of course. There are three types of employment status. At one end of the scale, you have employees. So they tend to be practice managers, receptionists, dental nurses, and often the cleaner, who is often forgotten about. And they have lots of protection under the law. One of the main elements of protection that they have is after 2 years of service, they have the right not to be unfairly dismissed. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that after they've been with you for 2 years, should you need to terminate the employment, it's quite difficult for you to do so unless you follow a fair procedure and have a fair reason to do so. At the other end of the scale, there are self-employed members of staff. So they tend to be associate dentists, hygienists and therapists, although I should point out that more and more people are actually employing their dental therapists and hygienists because in some respects it's easier to employ them. Okay. But basically they have very few rights under the employment legislation. So what that means is that they have... there's lots of flexibility for the practice owner to bring the engagement to an end. All you would have to do is serve the usually 3 months industry standard notice. Okay. To bring the engagement to an end, and you wouldn't have the risk of an unfair dismissal claim.
So you wouldn't have to give them a reason. It can just be you know, you don't need the services any longer.
Absolutely. I mean, it does depend on the individual circumstances, because some self-employed persons still can make a claim for discrimination. Okay. So what that means is that if you had a self-employed member of staff who, for example, went off on maternity leave and you just sent them a letter saying, here's notice to terminate, there's an inference that could be drawn there that they've been terminated because of their maternity leave.
Okay, yeah, that.
And that would be sex discrimination. So you do have to make it really clear in the termination letter why those services are being terminated, because it's probably got nothing to do with the fact that they've gone on maternity leave. It's just got everything to do with the fact that the business has changed.
Yeah.
So you do have to make that really clear just to protect yourselves. And the third status is worker status. So not a lot of people know about the third employment status. It's very rarely used in practice. But for a practice owner, it is worthwhile knowing about it. Workers have some rights under the law, but not as many as employees. So, for example, the type of rights they have, the right to be paid annual leave or the right to be paid national living wage. But again, they don't have the right to bring an unfair dismissal claim.
Okay.
So what the circumstances where it tends to be used, a worker contract, is if you have somebody who, for example, is on 0-hour contracts.
Right, yeah.
And you bring them in to do an assignment, and they stay with you for a couple of weeks, and then you may not use them for a few months, and then you get them back in for a few weeks.
Okay.
And then may not use them again for some time. I've got a client who's an orthodontic practice, and they use students to come in during the school holidays to do archiving and things like that. And that would be a worker status. Yeah. So basically you could terminate the contract without risk of an unfair dismissal claim.
Okay. I mean, obviously in practice, you know, it is a concern of when anything goes wrong, you know, who can make a claim and how that's going to pan out. So as a business owner, how do you, you know, what's your best advice to how to protect them against, to be ready for this?
Yeah, most claims arise because of miscommunication, and it can be miscommunication as in they thought they were being engaged on different terms to what you as the practice owner were engaging them on, or it can be that something's gone wrong within the practice where communication's just failing. But ultimately the best way to deal with it is to have the correct contracts in place, and I always say no two practices are the same, so you will want bespoke contracts to suit you and your practice. I often find that practice owners download a contract, a standard contract, and then they try and fill it in themselves or try and make amendments to suit them and the associate. And I think that's really good that they're trying to include terms to suit them and the associate or them and the employee. Yeah. However, most practice owners aren't legally trained to draft contracts, so they should always take advice. But the key is to make sure that the contracts are drafted and correct, and that will actually prevent a lot of disputes moving forward.
Yeah. Something I do get asked, actually, it's not probably what I was going to be speaking about today, but you perhaps you can answer it for me, is if someone's been, you know, self-employed with you and they've had a contract in place for, say, 8 or 9 years or even longer, is it good to refresh that contract?
Yeah, absolutely. So for employees, I always say you should be having an annual review for employees, because the employment legislation changes so frequently that probably the contract that you had in place a year ago is now outdated and there will be changes. For self-employed staff, again, law moves on. Employment is one of the fastest moving areas of law, and therefore it's really important to review them. Maybe not as often as an employed contract, but I would say every few years. And one of the main areas where I see disputes happening is where there's been a change within the practice. So whether that's a change from sole proprietor to a partnership or to a limited company, or all of a sudden you've gone from one practice to three practices, that is going to have an effect on the self-employed contract that you have. And therefore, when there's changes within the practice, I would always advise that you do get the self-employed contract looked at and changed.
And would that go for if there was changes in working hours or conditions, would you issue another contract then?
If it's a small change, so something along the lines of changing hours, I wouldn't say go to the expense and the time of providing a completely new self-employed contract. But what I often say is do a what I refer to as a rider, or it can be a letter, just setting out that there's been a change. So let's say the hours of work are in clause six. So you would say clause six has now been amended to say what the new hours are, and you'd write them down, and you would make it clear within that letter that the rest of the terms and conditions remain the same. Get both parties to sign it and just keep it on their personnel file for future reference.
Okay. The other thing we often get asked with self-employed team members is the patient side of things. You know, whose patients are they? Where do they belong?
Yeah.
Especially when someone's given notice to leave. So what's your views on that?
I always say it's a really popular question, and I always say to my clients, nobody owns patients. That's the first point. You can't own people. What you can own is goodwill, and goodwill is really hard to describe because it's not tangible. But the best way to protect the goodwill is to ensure that as a practice owner, what you do have is a restrictive covenants within an associate agreement. So restrictive covenants have got various names. Some people refer to them as barring out clauses or binding out clauses, restrictions. And lots of people think that they're not worth the paper they're written on. But actually, as a practice owner, it is the only way you can protect that goodwill. I mean, you've poured all this money into running a business. Mm-hmm. So you want to ensure that you do protect it. And these restrictions need to be drafted reasonably. Mm-hmm. They need to be carefully drafted to make sure that you can enforce them. And what they do is they prevent the associate from setting up in business within a certain radius, or working for people or another competitor within a certain radius, prevent advertising, prevent the poaching of staff. And they're really important. It's really something that should be reviewed on a regular basis, because the area will change in which you're practicing in. So just to make sure that they are kept up to date. And what you do need to ensure as well is that those restrictions that basically they kick in as soon as notice is served, because what you don't want them doing is kicking in after the associates left, because you want to protect yourself during that notice period to make sure that if an associate is leaving, they're not telling patients during that notice period. So that's the only way really that you can protect it. And when people are buying practices, they will expect to see that there are restrictions in a self-employed agreement, because they want to know that what they're buying, the goodwill, is protected in that regard.
We do come across people that have got contracts with the mile stipulation of how far they have to be away from the practice. Mm-hmm. That's quite a regular practice, I think. But there is lots of other things you can put in there, I presume, as well, just to protect your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are, with an associate agreement or a self-employed hygienist or therapist, they are very bespoke. Mm-hmm. You can put anything you like in these agreements, because they're not regulated by legislation. So, for example, an employment contract is legislated for, so there's certain terms that you have to have within there. So you can have whatever clauses you require in there to protect your business. The only advice I would give in that regard is just make sure that they don't become too controlling. Because if you start becoming controlling, then it could be actually moving from self-employed status to employment status.
Oh, I get you. Yeah, you have to be careful that where.
Absolutely. Mm. And it's all about control. So the more control you have over somebody, the more likely it is that they would be found to be an employee opposed to self-employed person. So there does need to be several self-employed indicators within a self-employed agreement.
Yeah.
But generally, and if you take advice on the type of clauses you want within there, we can advise of whether it's too controlling and too reflective of an employment situation.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because if you become too controlling and you want to terminate, and they have more than 2 years' service, and you serve them 3 months standard industry notice, but the associate's not very happy, and then they go and see a solicitor or take advice, and the solicitor says, well, actually, that's a really controlling agreement, it's more reflective of an employment situation, they could then try and claim that they were an employee and claim unfair dismissal, which we spoke about at the outset. And the type of compensation awarded in an unfair dismissal claim is up to £80,000. So it's quite eye-watering amount that can be awarded in those circumstances.
So it's important you get your contracts right from the start.
Absolutely.
Just one more thing, Sarah, just thinking about that. I mean, occasionally we do go in practices that still haven't got contracts in place. Uh-huh. And when someone does give notice, they'll say, you know, do I still need to follow the standard practice, whatever that may be. And that's where sometimes problems have arisen. I mean, obviously my advice is to, you know, moving forward is make sure you get a contract in place. But is there certain things that they have to do, you know, with a self-employed person if someone gives notice?
Well, I think it's good practice to always acknowledge the termination, just because if they're leaving under a grey cloud, for example, you may want to try and resolve that, or you may want to learn from that moving forward. But best practice, always acknowledge. If there's no contract in place, the problem there is that they may be going to work for a competitor and there isn't a lot you can do about it. So it's just really important that you do have contracts in place, and I say get them in place as quickly as possible, maybe even before they start with you at the practice. So when you're sending them the offer, you send them the associate agreement and say, this is what you're signing up to, can you sign this before you start? And if they don't sign that agreement, I think you need to consider whether it is somebody who you'd like to take on in your practice.
I'll push back the start date, because when they get in practice, you get so busy and other things happen, and you do forget, and that's how sometimes they are slipped through.
And it's much harder to negotiate terms with somebody who's already working for you and you've already got a relationship with, as if you don't really know them and they're not working for you, the negotiation process can be much easier for you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we could be here all day, but we'll end that for now. But thanks very much, Sarah.
Thank you.